Today's shiur is Masechet Bava Basra Daf Kuf Chav Ches. We will begin on Daf Kuf Chav Zayin Amud Beis, two lines from the bottom. Actually, what we're going to be learning today in today's shiur is seven different situations where Rav Abba was involved in shailus and tshuvas, questions and answers in areas of halacha, and different answers, different questions and answers were given. And as the Rashbam explains, one of the seven subjects that are discussed is the issue that we discussed in the previous year, the issue of Yakir, the machloikus of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbanan. And since that's one of the issues that Abba had a shaila v'tshuva about, the Gemara quotes all the other issues to include it is that one. It says the Gemara, Sholach le'Rab Abba le'Rab Yosef b'chama. Haim l'chaveri. Somebody challenges someone else and says to him, Avdi ganafti, you stole my slave. Ruoimer, and he responds, Loi ganafti, I never stole your slave from you. So he asks him, Sumativa etzloch, why is my slave with you? So he responds, because Ata machartali, you sold me the slave. Ata nasatali b'matana, or you gave me the slave as a gift. So the person who has holding the slave says to the person who's challenging him, Ritzoincha hishavavatol, if you want, you can make a shvua that this slave indeed belongs to you. And if you will make such a shvua, you will be able to take back the slave, v'nishba, and he indeed makes such a shvua, ein yachal achsaba. The person who made this offer that he should swear cannot retract on that offer. And a number of comments in helping us to try to understand the Gemara. First question that the Rishonim pose is that we learned in Masechta Baba Metzia that Hagoydris, anything movable, Ein Lahem Chazaka, doesn't have a Chazaka. So why if I'm holding on to someone else's slave, is he not believed? The fact that I'm holding it shouldn't create that I have a chazaka on that slave. So Rishonim offer a number of terutzim. One terutz is that even though on slaves which are movable there is no chazaka, but after 3 years there is a chazaka. And here, this person was holding onto the slave already 3 years. Another pshat that the Rishonim suggest is Hagoydris Ein Lahem Chazaka, but a slave that's a young baby that can't walk on his own, there, the fact that he's holding that slave certainly creates a situation of Chazaka. A third teretz is, where is their concept of Hagoydris Ein Lahem Chazaka? Well, we know for sure that you own the slave and you're challenging my having the slave. And the fact that he's in my possession, we have a concept of Hagoydrois Ein Lahem Chazaka. But our Gemara is referring to a situation that the challenger cannot bring conclusive proof that he owned that slave. Therefore, the fact that I have the slave certainly puts me in a stronger position. And as Rashbam explains, Al Pidin, the halacha in such a situation, is that I keep the slave, and your challenge is completely ignored. What I did here in responding to you to make a shvua and then you could have the slave actually represents a double benefit that I'm giving to you. Number one, the fact that I'm offering to settle this dispute with a shvua. But moreover, typically in halacha, the way it works is if a shvua is required, is that the person who makes the shvua and absolves him of any obligation. In this situation, it's just the opposite. I challenge you to make the shvua, and if you make the shvua, you will receive the slave. Still, tells us the Gemara, if I make such an offer and you accept it, the halacha is that I can't retract. As Rashbam explains, I can't say Mishata Nibach, I wasn't serious in my offer. If I made the offer, I have to follow the offer. Machloikus Rishonim, at what point can I no longer retract my offer? Some Rishonim explain, as it seems is the wording of the Gemara, as soon as you make the Shvua, I can no longer retract. But up to the point that the Shvua is made, I can retract my offer. However, the Ramban disagrees, and the Ramban says that as soon as the offer of a Shvua is made, I can no longer retract. And the way the Ramban explains is because the offer to make a Shvua represents a Gmar Din. It's as if the Psak Abezdin has already been handed down. And once the Psak Abezdin has been handed down, I can no longer retract. And in fact, there's a fundamental Machloikus Rishonim, which may be connected to this Machloikus Rishonim, why I can no longer retract. The Nemuka Yosef, and I think that's what the Rashbam is trying to say, say that what I'm saying to you is that as soon as you make a Shvua, that is proof to me that you're saying the truth. And once that's proof that you're saying the truth, I have to accept the truth and I have to give you back the slave. The Rashba, I think, seems to believe that this is more in the category of Takonis Bezdin. And once there's a Takonis Bezdin, once I agree to accept your Shvua, it's as if there's a Psak of Bezdin. And once there's a Psak of Bezdin, then I can't retract my offer. Perhaps the Nafka Mina will be what we discussed. Will there be a need, until what point could I retract? Could be another Nafka Mina, as the first can point out is, does a kinyan, do I have to make a kinyan, does a kinyan have to be made along with this offer? If we learn, it's a concept of Bezdin, so the halach is that before the Torah begins, a kinyan is required. So here too a kinyan would be required. If on the other hand, we say that I'm accepting that you're saying the truth, there perhaps a kinyan would not be required. Ask the Gemara, my kamash malon, what is this din teaching us that we haven't already learned in the Mishnah, Masechta Sanhedrin? Because the Mishnah Tanina teaches us Masechta Sanhedrin, Amalai. If one litigant says to his opponent in a din Torah, Neman Alai Abba, our father, my father, Neman Alai Avicha, your father, to be Dayanim in this case, even though typically the halacha is obviously there can't be Dayanim, a father, or Neman Alai Shlosh Roy Bakar, as the Rashbam explains, Shlosh Roy Bakar would typically Amaratsim. Ramei says, even though I made this offer, I could go back. I cannot reverse myself. So we see that Rav Ab is telling us the same thing as the Chachamim, that once I made an offer, I can't go back. Answers Gemara, Hakamashmat. Where Rav Ab is teaching us in the halacha that we learned about the Eved, that we can't learn or can't understand from the Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin, that the Etem Machloikus, Etem Lach Machloikus, V'Lach Kedivri Chachamim. There's a Machloikus in the Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin, how to understand the Machloikus of Ramei Chachamim. One opinion is that the Machloikus of Ramei Chachamim is that once I make an offer, I have to keep to that offer, is only in a situation where it involves me forfeiting a right. But it doesn't involve me giving something. Another version is that the Machlokes Ramei Chachamim involves even in a situation where the person who's making the offer will end up giving something that he's holding. And that's exactly what Reb Ab is teaching us in our Gemara, that if an offer is made, it has to be honored, even in a situation where it involves giving up something that I already have. The Rishonim ask, based on a Gemara that we just learned the other day, that how could somebody say that a father will be an accepted dayan if the halacha is that midaraisa, a father is disqualified from being a dayan? Wouldn't this be a situation of masna mashakos b'Torah, and you can't make a tanai against what it says in the Torah? So certainly, if we follow the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, that masna mashakos b'Torah, B'davish b'momin, if it's only a monetary issue, it's acceptable. So here we're referring to an entire din of fowls, financial issues. But some Rishonim explain, even according to the opinion of Rameya, that masna mashakos b'toira, even by davish b'momin, the Tanai is bottled. Here it won't be so. Why? Because where do we know that indeed a father is possible to be a dayin in a din Torah that involves a son? Because the Torah says, lo yumsu avos abonim, ubonim al avosam. So that din Torah that the Torah is speaking, where the Torah teaches us that a father is a disqualified judge, obviously is only in a capital situation. The Torah says, lo yumsu, that they shouldn't die. So the Torah that disqualified a father perhaps only disqualified him in a din Torah that involves capital offense, not din imamnis. The Rashbam says it was strictly shloisha roi bakar who could be accepted, because roi bakar are amaratzim, but roi tzoyim were individuals who were ganovim, and the Rashbam suggests that roi tzoyim, even if they agree to accept them, cannot be accepted as dayanim. And in fact, the Shoshanim LeDavid points out that in later time, as we will learn in Masechta Sanhedrin, they decreed that even Roye Boker are disqualified from being Dayanim. Tachsam Seifer says as follows. Tachsam Seifer says that Roye Boker are disqualified, and Roye Tzoyin are both disqualified from being Dayanim. However, Roye Boker could be accepted if both parties agree to be Edim, and Roye Tzoyin cannot even be accepted to be Edim, even if both parties agree. So Rameya says that both parties could, even if I made such an offer, I could retract. However, the Rishonim point out that Rameya says that I could retract is only as long as a kinyan was made, but wasn't made. But once a kinyan was made, that I accept the psak of Bezdin, of this, even this Bezdin, I can no longer point out. Now, the Shach explains what kind of kinyan has to be made. He says that the kinyan is not a kinyan that I won't back out, but the kinyan has to be a kinyan that I will accept the psak of Bezdin. And once I make such a kinyan, even Rameya agrees, I cannot go back. Rameya, the Chachamim, on the other hand, said, "Ein yochalach sabay." But the Rishonim make a very interesting observation. They say, only in a situation where there's with chod l'reyosai, there's only one deficiency. That means, we chose a father or one of the Roye Boker to be one of the Dayanim in this case. And as we explained, they are typically disqualified to be Dayanim. And that's why in such a circumstance, the Chachamim, I accepted something myself that we didn't have to. And that's why the halacha is that, but once I make the offer, ein yochalach sabay, I can't go back. However, point out to Rishonim, let's say there'll be two issues. Number one, I accepted upon myself a dayan who's a disqualified individual to be a dayan. And not only did I accept upon myself such an individual to be a dayan, but I also accepted upon myself that he should paskin the shayla by himself instead of being just one member of a 3-member court. There, even the Chachamim will agree that before, as long as there was no kinyan made, yochalach sabay, I could retract. The next issue that Rav Abba addresses, shalach Rav Abba l'Rav Yosef b'chama, halacha, the halacha is goyvim and avodim. We know that in the Torah, many times a eved is compared to karka. So just like we know, as we discussed many times, if somebody borrows money, all of his property becomes meshubed, becomes mortgaged to the loan, says Rav Abba that the same halacha will apply to avodim. Since avodim are treated like karka, one's slaves also become mortgaged to his debts. Rav Nachman Amar Ein Goyver. Rav Nachman says they don't become mortgaged. Because even though the Torah compares Avodim to Karka, that's only regarding certain halachas, regarding the halacha of how a kinyan is made, that the same way kinyan is made on Karka, so is kinyan made in Avodim. But not regarding this din. And as the Rishonim explain, when I lend someone money, I expect his property to be mortgaged to that obligation. But I don't put my mind that his slaves will be mortgaged to that obligation. The next issue. Shalach le'Rab Abba le'Rab Yosef b'Chama. Halacha shlishi b'sheni kosher. Here our Gemara is referring to the issue of who is considered a relative and who is not considered a relative as far as saying Edus. And our Gemara speaks about generations. The first generation are two brothers, Reuven and Shimon. The second generation are their children, who are first cousins. And the third generation are the grandchildren of Reuven and Shimon. And he's teaching us that Shlishi B'Sheni, a third generation, B'Sheni with a second generation, that means they're not first cousin. A first cousin once removed, kosher is kosher to say Edus. Rav Amar, Rav goes on to say, and as we will see in Mitzvah Shema tomorrow's shir, it's not that Rav is necessarily disagreeing with Rav Abba, he's just speaking about a different situation, and he's saying Afberishin, that means a third generation and a first generation could say Edus. That means one can say Edus for his uncle. One could say Edus for his great uncle, who's a third generation. And Machlaikis in the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah, what the halacha is. The Shulchan Aruch says that Shlishi Berishin is kosher to say Edus. And then he says, V'yesh Ayim Shupasol. And Ramah says, V'kein Roy Lahiris, that the way we should act is not to allow Edus between a great uncle and a nephew. But the Ramah adds, that it's only posel midrabanan, and therefore the Paiskim say that even according to the Ramah, v'lechatchila, certainly we should not have an edus between a great uncle and his great nephew, but the evid, if such an edus was said, it is acceptable. Now, Rava clearly said the third generation with a first generation is mutter. So now we're talking about a third generation and a first generation. So says Mabar of Ashi, Achshav Avad Abba, that one could say Edus between a grandfather, because a grandfather and a grandson is a third generation to a first generation. However, says the Gemara, V'les Hilchasa Kamar Barav Ashi, the halacha doesn't follow Mabar of Ashi, and certainly one may not say Edus for a grandfather. The question is, however, how far down the line does this go? It seems that the opinion of the Rashbam is that one can never say Edus for a grandfather or a great-grandfather to anybody who's a direct descendant from. Tosfos says that it only seems to go up to a great-grandfather. But further than a great-grandfather would be permitted. And Rabbi Chanan brings a raya to Tosfos' opinion, because the Pasuk says, Im tishaker li ulanini ulanechti. So it seems that the relationship goes between a great-grandfather and a great-grandchild, but not any further. However, point out the Paiskim, if Mabar of Ashi is teaching us that one is allowed to say Edus for his grandfather, what would be the halacha according to Rav Ashi? Are you supposed to give Derech Eretz? Is the din of Kibbut of the Aim applicable to a grandfather? So says the Bach, that even Mabar of Ashi that says that the grandfather and a grandchild don't have such a close relationship, and therefore they could say Edus for each other, that certainly has no relevance to the halacha of kibur ava'im. And the Mefarshim explain, because since kibur ava'im is the obligation of kibur ava'im stems from the fact that they were involved in your creation, so certainly a grandfather or even a great grandfather, you could have never come to the world because they, without their involvement, and therefore there is obligation to, there's an obligation to give them covered, even if there is no, well, even if there is no problem with saying Eidus for the other. Similarly, the Rishonim seem to learn that not only when we speak about a grandfather doesn't mean your father's father, but even whatever halacha will apply by your father's father, the same din will apply by your father-in-law's father. Continues the Gemara. Shalach le'Rab Abba le'Rab Yosef b'Chava. How you day like be'edus karka? Somebody knew testimony for somebody else about his property, and he was aware of this testimony actually in the stama before the witness Rahman Slan became blind for the stama, and then Rahman Slan he became blind. Puzzle. He's puzzled to say edus. Most Rishonim explain the Gemara, that the Gemara answer will become clear later, is teaching us, at least according to Rav Abba, that a person who's blind is inherently possible to say Eidus. However, there are Rishonim, I think the Meiri takes the opinion that it depends on what type of Eidus we're referring to. If the Eidus that we're discussing refers to this discussion of a specific item, as we'll see in the Gemara, to speak about a specific item, so this person, Rahman al-Slan, is blind, so he's incapable of saying Eidus, even if he knew about it beforehand. But what would be the halacha if it doesn't require knowledge about any specific article? What it requires is knowledge about an event. There, some Rishonim want to say, for example, if this person is aware that Reuven owes Shimon money, there the Rishonim want to suggest that a blind person would be kosher to say Eidus. But we're going to learn the Gemara the way the Rajbam seems to learn, that Rav Abba's opinion is that a person who's blind, Rahman Slan, is inherently disqualified from saying Eidus. Shmuel Amar, Shmuel disagrees, and he says, kosher, this person is qualified to say Eidus. Because Efshar the Mechav Mitzunah, he's aware of the boundaries, even though he's now blind, and therefore he's qualified to say Eidus. Aval Glima, to say Eidus regarding a coat, that is already too much. That he's not able to say. And the way the Shevet Sofer understands Shmuel's opinion is that for Eidus to be kosher, we require a tfias ayin. So saying borders of a piece of property is in the category of tfias ayin. Saying Eidus about a coat is only a simen, and may even be, says the Shevet Sofer, in the category of a simen muvak. And according to Shmuel, a simen muvak is not enough. Rav Sheshes disagrees. He says a blind person could say testimony of filo glimo, even about a garment. Because efshed mechavim midas arkay midas rochbay. And the way we're understanding, because the opinion of Rav Sheshes is that saying Eidus based on a simen muvak is also adequate. And as the Ktsois explains, even though typically a simen muvik is not enough to prove ownership, that's if I want to prove that I own something, so thereby me giving a simen muvik, that doesn't prove that I own it. Here we're talking about Eidus, it could be that a simen muvik is enough. Ava nascha, Rav Sheshes will agree that he can't say testimony regarding the ownership of a metal bar, because since they all have identical dimensions, so he can't say Eidus. For a papama, a blind person could say Eidus even regarding a naska, regarding a bar of silver or a bar of gold, because efshed mechavin midas mishkalosov, he could designate the prop, the weight precisely. So it's very interesting, the Rishonim point out. Here it seems that the designation of saying await is less of a quality testimony than when you're speaking about the dimensions of something. In other areas of halacha, we find that weight, if somebody could say the weight of a garment, that's considered much more testimony than just saying its dimensions. So Rishonim explained, it really depends on the specific item we're talking about. Typically, people don't weigh coats. They don't weigh clothing. So if I have such a proof that I can even say the weight of this garment, that clearly is a real proof. But by bars of silver and gold, where people obviously usually do weigh them, weight is not as much of a raya as it may be by a garment. Meisvei asked the Gemara on the opinion of Shmuel and Rav Sheshes and Rav Papa. It says in a brisa, if someone who was aware of Edis actually Nasa Chosnay before he became a son-in-law. For Nasa Chosnay, then he becomes a son-in-law. Pikeach, or somebody who was a normal person. For Nascharsh, then he became a deaf mute. And as the Rashbam points out, we're referring here to a situation where the person became a deaf mute. But if he just can't speak, that's not the subject of our brisa. Because the Rashbam says there's a very big difference between a deaf mute, between a cherish, and someone who can't speak. Someone who can't speak has a problem. He can't articulate his edus. But he isn't inherently disqualified from being an aid. All the cases that the brisa is referring to, shaita, suma, are people who are inherently disqualified from being edim. And therefore, says the Rashbam, that here when it says v'nischarish, it means they became a cherish, a total deaf mute. If he was piteach, he was able to see, v'nistama, and then he became blind, or shafui, he was sane, v'nishtatan, then he became insane, all of these cases, he's possible to say testimony when he's in this status. Aval, hayu yodele be'edus, achloi nasachastoi. If somebody says new edus before he became a son-in-law, and then v'nasachasnoi, and then he becomes a son-in-law, and then v'mesabitoi, and the daughter dies, so he's no longer a son-in-law. And as the Rashbam points out, it's referring to a situation where there were no children were left over from that marriage. But if there were children left over from that marriage, even though the wife no longer is alive, still he remains disqualified. Still he remains disqualified to say Edus, because as the Rishonim point out, even though this is the subject of a Machloikis in Masechta Sanhedrin, still that special relationship that exists between a father-in-law and a son-in-law continues to exist if the children Pikeach v'nischarish v'chazim v'akeach Pikeach v'nistama, if he was blind, if he was seeing, then he became blind, and then he, Baruch Hashem, could see again, and all these situations, or Shafi v'nishtata, he was sane, then he became insane, Rachman Tzlan, and then he became sane again, and all these cases, kosher, he's qualified to say Edus. Kuzaklal, this is the rule. Kosher Tchilasa is Soif of Apostles, if he was apostle at the beginning, when the testimony was to be seen, or when he comes to say the testimony, apostle, he's apostle aid. However, tchilasa v'sofa b'kashrus, if at the beginning when he saw the testimony, he was fine. And now when he comes to say the testimony, he's fine. Even though in the middle he was disqualified, he is a person that's kosher. But here clearly is indicated that someone who's blind is clearly apostle to say edus. To Yufta the Kula. So all these other opinions that we learned that seem to indicate that someone who's blind could, under certain circumstances, say Edis, are clearly refuted to Yufta, indeed, that they're refuted. The Mefarshim point out that why is the halacha that if a son-in-law can't say Edis for a father-in-law, Why is the halacha, if he's no longer a son-in-law, can he say Eidus? Why should we not be concerned that perhaps the father-in-law asked the son-in-law to divorce his wife in order that he should be able to say Eidus, and then after he'll say Eidus, he'll remarry his wife? So the Paiskim say a very interesting approach. They say no son-in-law will agree to divorce his wife in order that his in order to be able to say Eidus for his father-in-law while they're divorced. But let's say it's a reverse situation where a son-in-law asks the father-in-law, could you say Eidus on my behalf? But the father-in-law says, I can't say Eidus on your behalf, I'm your father-in-law. So the son-in-law says, you know what, I'll divorce my wife so that you could say Eidus for me and then I'll remarry her. That we have to be concerned for, and therefore a son-in-law who divorces his wife could say Eidus on behalf of his father-in-law. But a son-in-law who divorces his wife, a father-in-law cannot say Eidus on his behalf even while they're divorced, because we're concerned that they might have colluded, that the son-in-law asked the father-in-law to say Eidus on his behalf and agreed to divorce his wife just to get his father-in-law to be able to say Eidus. The Paiskim also point out that all of these situations that one can't say Eidus, if while the person saw the Eidus, he was disqualified, it doesn't include the situation where if somebody was disqualified because he, at the time he saw the Eidus, he was identified as a shakran, as a liar. Because even though when he saw the Eidus, he was a liar, it doesn't change the din if when he comes to say the Eidus, he's Baruch Hashem, no longer in that category. The fact that when he saw the Eidus, he was in that category, that doesn't disqualify him. Certainly, also the Paiskim can point out that let's say somebody witnessed a couple getting married, and then when he witnessed that couple getting married, he was a disqualified aide for whatever reason, as we've been learning, and then he becomes a qualified aide and that couple is still married, so he isn't testifying anymore on what he saw at the beginning, he's testifying on what he sees now. That certainly will be a kashura aidus. The Maral says on this Gemara that our Gemara says that if Tchilosa b'kashrus, if at the beginning he was a kosher aid, v'soifa b'kashrus, and at the end he's kosher, even though if he's in the middle he was posel, he still remains a kosher aid, says the Maral, this is a lesson for our lives. Every person is born pure as a baby. And then sometimes, unfortunately, during our life, we may not act properly. But then at the end, if somebody does tshuva, he's in the category of tchilosa b'kashrus, the soifa b'kashrus, and as our Gemara calls him, he's considered kosher. The next issue Reb Abba addresses. Shalach le Reb Abba le Reb Yosef b'chama. Ha'ayma al tinik ben abonim neman. If somebody says about a child amongst his other children, he's neman. Reb Yosef b'chama ain't a neman. So right away, ask the Gemara, my kamar. It's a very difficult statement that's being made here. What is being said? Amar Abaye Hachikamer. This is the way to understand. Haimal Tinik Ben Abonim. If somebody says regarding one of his sons, Yirish Kol Nechasai, that this son should Yarshin all of my assets, the halacha is Neman. Why? He has that ability. Because we follow the halacha of Rabbi Yochim and Breika, which we will discuss. Rabbi Yochim Abraika's opinion is that even though if you use the word Yerusha, you have to follow the Hilchis Yerusha, still says Rabbi Yochim Abraika, if you designate a person who's supposed to be your Yairish to get a larger portion or a smaller portion than he was supposed to, that still falls under the halachas of Yerusha. Rabbi Yochim, however, says Ein Neman Kerabonon, because he follows the halacha of the Rabbanon, that even if the person that you're giving a bigger or smaller share is a Yairish, that doesn't give you the right to change even that much the rules of the Torah. Maskel of Rava asks Rava if that's the way to understand the machloikis of Rabbi Yochanan, so the wording of Neman, Ve'ena Neman, is a difficult wording. What does it have to do with believing? Yirish v'lo yirish mibaylei. The question is this a valid declaration or not? And therefore Rava says, and as I said at the beginning of the shir, it's because of this ruling that we're learning all of these various halachas there of Abba taught us, hachakama. Haimak atinik bein abonim. If somebody says on a child, and he may even be a younger child, as we learned in the previous shir, that he is my b'char, he's neman. A father has that nemanis. Even as we learned, what will happen now is that the person till now who he assumed, who was muhsik to be the b'char, will not be the b'char. And even what will come out by him making this statement, the older child or another child will be declared apostle, a disqualified child, a neman, a Reb Yehuda. According to the opinion of Yehuda, all of that is included in the concept of yakir, that a father has such an ability. Reb Yochanan Breika says the father doesn't have that ability because he follows the opinion of the Rabbanim. The sixth report. Shalach le Reb Abba le Reb Yochanan Bachama. Ha'omer. If somebody says, Tito Ishti Kechem Min Abonim. If somebody says, my wife should get a share of my estate like one of my children. So the halach is, Noitelos Kechem Min Abonim. She indeed has the right to get that share. The Rashbam brings down two opinions. How do we understand what this man is saying? One opinion is that the man is saying that my wife should get a share in the Yerusha, and in exchange for giving her a share in the Yerusha that normally a wife is not entitled to, she will give up her right to collect the ksuba. That's one pshat the Rashbam suggests. Another pshat that the Rashbam suggests is that it has nothing to do with the ksuba. The husband is concerned for his wife's welfare, and therefore, even though Midaraisa, as we've been learning, she is not a Yairish, he designates that she should be a Yairish, and therefore, he does it. And as the Michetz Yitzchak points out, even though, as we've learned, that we're going to learn, one should be careful not to change the order of the Yerusha as set forth in the Torah, when one is doing it on behalf of his wife, there the din is that he may do so, because we find in many areas in Chazal that they were concerned for the welfare, for the financial welfare of one's wife. How is this affected? So there are two approaches in the Rishonim. One is that the person making this declaration is a Shchimira, and we know Divrei Shchimira Kiksuvim Kimsurim Dami, and therefore no kinyan is even required. If, on the other hand, when the person is making the statement, he's Baruch Shem, still fine and well, then the halacha would be that he would have to make a kinyan, for it to be valid. Amar Rava, says Rava, when can he make this, on what assets will this declaration be effective? But nechasim shel achshav, anything that he owns right now, but something that he doesn't own, ain adam makta davar shelo b'loilam. And as the Rishonim point out, even according to the opinion of Meir, that adam makna davar shelo b'loilam, Rameya only says that if the person expressly indicated that he wants to make a kinyan on something that doesn't exist in the world. Here, with such a declaration is not being made, he can't make, it's not included in what he said. Uve banim, habayim lachem kan. Even though when he made this declaration, some children that weren't yet born, the children that will be born after this declaration will certainly share in the Yerusha. Because certainly we assume that that was what the father intended when he made the Yerusha. So the Rashbam points out that just like our Gemara teaches us that if there are more children that come after the declaration is made, they are included in sharing in the Yerusha. The same will go the other way. That let's say some of the children are no longer alive when the estate is to be divided, then the halach when the state is to be divided, those children are not counted in the division. The Rosh discusses an interesting question. What would be the halacha, Rachmana Litzlan, if such a declaration was made? And then after this declaration was made, by the time it came to divide the estate, all of the sons had died. Some Rishonim suggest that that she would take the entire estate, based on the Rashbam we just quoted. Others say that if it turns out to be Rachman Slan, a situation where all the children pass away, we divide it the way it was when the declaration was made, with the amount of children that were there when the declaration was made. The seventh halacha. Sholach le Rav Abba le Rav Yosef Bachama. Hamotish tachoy vil chaveri. If somebody produces a document against somebody else, Malva Omer, and the Malva says, lo nefrati klum, I wasn't paid at all. The Loiva Omer, and the Loiva says, prati machza, I paid half. The Edom Edom, and there were Edom that say testimony, shapara kulay, that he actually paid up the entire loan. So the halacha is that it's considered a situation of moed b'miksas, that he admits that he owns half the loan, and the halacha is by every moed b'miksas that he has to swear, and therefore hareiz neshba, he swears for goyva mechza b'nechasim neicharim, and then the malva could collect. So he swears that he paid half and owes half. So the half that he owes, the malva may only collect from the nechasim b'nei chayrim of the loiva, not from amr mishbadim loy, the amri, because the people, the lekuchas, the people who have bought property from the loiva, could say, anan an edim samchinen, we're relying on the edim. And the edim say that the loan is completely paid off. So as the Rishonim point out, two reasons why the Lekuchas have a right to say it. One reason is we have to be concerned for a kanunya. We have to be concerned that there was a conspiracy between the Malva and the Loiva, that the Loiva will say that I pay half and I owe half, in order that the Malva should be able to collect the half that the Loiva agrees is still owed, and they made a conspiracy, they should collect it from the Lekuchas, because the Loiva doesn't have any bnei chayrim, and then they'll divide it between themselves. Another pshat that the Rishonim suggests is that the entire reason the loiva is believed is because we have a situation of hadas baldin, that the loiva himself is agreeing that he owes half the money, and hadas baldin kamei edim dami. Explain the Rishonim, we only apply the concept of hadas baldin kamei edim dami to the detriment of the person who's making the admission. Where we don't apply the concept of Edos Baldin Kamei Edom Dami to the detriment of anyone else. And therefore, since this is to the detriment of the Lekuchas, we don't say Edos Baldin Kamei Edom Dami. Says the Gemara, Vafila Rav Akiva D'Amar, even according to the opinion of Rav Akiva that says Meshiv Avedim He'avi, Rav Akiva is referring to a situation is where somebody found a purse, and he returns it to its owner. The owner opens the purse and he finds $100 in it. He says, there were $1,000 in this purse. You stole from me money. So Avada, the person who found the purse, says that he doesn't have to swear. Why? Because Meshav Aveda. We did it he did a favor. They returned the thing. The same thing, says Rav Akiva, is the halacha that, let's say we have a shtar, and the shtar says that I owe you sloy, coins. And I come and I say I owe you 3 coins. And you say I owe you 5 coins. So I say, Rav Akiva says he's a Meshav Aveda. Because sloyim could be interpreted to be 2 coins. By me saying 3 coins, I'm doing more than I had to. And therefore, I'm not considered a Moed of Mixis, I'm considered a Meshav Aveda. And even though, as we said a moment ago, a Moed of Mixis has to swear, certainly a Meshav Aveda doesn't have to swear. Says the Gemara, when do we have a category of a Meshav Aveda? Hech Delaka Edom. In the case of the wallet, where there were no Edom, how much money was in the wallet when it was found. In the case of the shtar that says Sloim, and there's no one that could define those words. Aval Hech Delaka Edom. in a case where there is Edom, such as our situation with our Edom, we could say that the Leiva was concerned that perhaps the Edom will come and say testimony on behalf of the Malva, and that's why he admitted to part of the debt, and that's why it's not considered Meshav of Eda, it's rather considered a situation of Moedah Mitzvah. Maskla Mabar Avashi Adarava. A feel of Shimon Lakish, Shimon Elazar, Domer, Moedah Mitzvah Tainahava, that says that his opinion is that in a situation of the Sloim, it's considered Moedah Mitzvah. Hani Meili, when does that apply? Hechad Delek Eden Kamasile, where there are no Eden that support him. Aval Hechad Ik Eden Kamasile, in a place where there are Eden that support him. Vadi Meshav Edehu. In our case, the Edom are backing up the Loiva, because the Loiva says he owes half. The Edom say he owes nothing. So certainly, he's in the category of a Meshav Edehu.